For our next guest, a talented journalist who writes about athletics on a wonderful new newsletter website, Real Sports with an H, H-R-E-A-L Sports. Patrick Rubia joining us on the program. Patrick, welcome back.
It's good to be back, and thank you for the plug. It is a silent H, just like my last name, so there's a real pun potential there. Very excited listening.
We always appreciate the puns, always appreciate the silent letters. I find them among my most favorite letters of all. This time around, we want to talk with you. We've talked with you about the NCAA and their foibles and weaknesses in the past, but you know, in the past, it largely just meant screwing kids out of money that was due them and costing them an education. But now we're talking life and death in the NCAA's response or lack thereof to COVID-19.
That's right. So, I mean, I think thinking about where to start here, the best comparison I can make is just as with this country in general, we have seen and paid the price of not having strong, coherent leadership on what do we do about this pandemic? What measures do we take society? What rules do we put in place for health, for safety, for prevention? So many things that could have happened, especially early on this pandemic, that could have saved so many lives, were not done from our federal government. The NCAA, in a small way, is mirroring this and reflecting this. It has taken a very laissez-faire approach to having any kind of rules for what all of these NCAA schools are doing to try to have sports come back and be played this fall. And when I say a laissez-faire approach, there are no rules. The NCAA has guidelines for things that schools should be doing to keep athletes safe, to prevent viral spread and outbreak. It has no rules at all, and that's a very important distinction.
And really, this began when the pandemic first reared its ugly head back in March, when it was not the NCAA stepping in initially to shut things down. It was individual conferences and leagues around the country.
That's right. They followed the lead of the Patriot League, the Ivy League. Again, yeah. I mean, look. I want to give the NCAA credit. They were wise and smart to shut down spring sports. They shut down the basketball tournament, which is a big money maker for them. Very close to the last minute. That's a good thing. We should. I mean, it's the necessary thing, and I don't want to give them too much praise for doing the thing they should have been doing. But at least they did it. That's good. But since then, look, I want to say it's not easy. This is a difficult thing. They are trying to balance wanting to try to have sports in the fall with can they actually be safe enough? And all these schools don't just have sports to worry about. They're trying to figure out where they can have classes at all and to what extent. How do they keep their professors safe and their students safe? So it's a complicated thing. But there are sort of standard rules that could be put into place. And like the NCAA has guidelines. They have some guidelines of like, if you're a sports program, here's the things you should be doing. You know, here are the best practices. Here's how to clean your facilities. Here's what you should be thinking about when it comes to testing your athletes, the length of your quarantine, all these kinds of things. But when I say guidelines, not rules, it just means they're suggestions. They're toothless. The NCAA essentially is putting out a piece of paper, and it's up to all these individual schools to follow those rules or not. And that is not as strong or as effective as putting in a rule where if you don't follow it, we're going to investigate, you're going to be punished. And look, we're talking about the NCAA here. They do a lot of that when it comes to athletes getting money or not getting money.
Right.
They're very capable of doing that when they want to.
Yeah, what does it say about the organization that they clearly care much more about amateurism or whatever they perceive that to be than in keeping these student athletes safe?
It says something really bad. And this is what I think people I've talked to about this, but that were surprised that the NCAA has been putting in rules here, don't seem to realize is the NCAA doesn't put in rules about anything when it comes to athlete health and safety. They only do this guideline approach. They do this sort of Trumpian thing where they don't want to actually take any leadership responsibility. So when it comes to concussion policy, right, like what you're supposed to do if an athlete's concussed, and putting them back on the field or back into play or not. When it comes to off-season workouts in college football, two players a year die from these crazy, stupid, out-of-control off-season workouts like Jordan McNair here in Maryland, where I live, died a few years ago, famously, of heat stroke.
Right.
All these deaths are preventable. the actual like athletic trainers and other medical experts have gone to the NCAA literally with a list of like, here's the things you should do and make as rules. And the NCAA, this is in 2012. The NCAA is still debating whether to make those things guidelines, not just enforceable rules. To get to what you asked, it shows that the NCAA as an organization is really built not to protect athletes and their health and safety, but to protect the economic value it can extract from those athletes.
We're talking with Patrick Ruby here on Downtown. And so essentially we're seeing it here at the University of Maine. There are some athletes on campus working out with some supervision. There are largely no other students on campus, but already around the country, we're seeing a great deal of positive tests for athletes. And we're relying on those people who will most directly benefit from the players, and that's coaches and administrators, athletic administrators, to do the right thing. And already we've seen some signs of revolt, largely at UCLA, where players said, we need an independent third party to come in and make sure things are done right.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, again, if you don't follow college sports, that might seem kind of crazy. Like UCLA players are demanding a third party to come in and basically protect whistleblowers if there are problems, to oversee everything. But it's not crazy if you follow college sports and realize how little effort is put into sort of protecting the health and safety of athletes. They're basically at the point of, you got to hope that your school is one of the good guys and doesn't put winning and money ahead of your health, which, again, as we see across all sports, not just college sports, you know, that's a real tension. That's a real problem. Those two things are often in conflict. And if you don't, it doesn't matter how good the individual coach or trainer or doctor or administrator is in your athletic department or on your team. If you don't have a good system in place to ensure that happens, people end up getting hurt, right? Even if you have good-hearted people, even if you have well-intentioned people, there's so much pressure to make money. There's so much pressure to win. There's so much pressure to get the product on the field. Athletes' health and safety often get sacrificed, and you have to have very strong systems to try to prevent that. And that's what you see the NCAA not doing, not stepping up, not taking a leadership role, not doing what they do for athlete, you know, money and amateurism, which is to say, we've got these rules, they're ironclad. If we think you violate them, we're going to investigate, we're going to punish, we're going to put down sanctions. You know, they move heaven and earth. If an athlete gets like a, you know, an envelope with some money, or like gets too much pasta, or gets whatever that isn't okay with amateurism. But when someone gets concussed and put back in the game, and then later they have lasting symptoms, no NCAA investigators come, no sanctions go down, nobody's there to pay for it when the athlete has lifelong problems. That's the real difference here. That's the real problem. And we're seeing it manifested with COVID-19 protections.
Here in the Northeast, we kind of keep an eye on what's going on with the Ivy Leagues, and they look like they're about to determine that all fall sports will move to the spring. Harvard announced yesterday that all of their classes will be online classes, that a small number of students will be on campus, largely the freshman class. Princeton will have only two classes there. And yet, I then turn around and see the president of Notre Dame, John Jenkins, who you quote in your piece, but also speaking out yesterday, saying that Harvard has somehow failed their students and their student-athletes.
Yeah, John Jenkins seems like really, really gung-ho on like this moral conviction that students somehow have to be on campus this fall, that they have to do everything they can to keep that going. Look, there are very good reasons. Like, it's not completely unreasonable to want... Look, learning is better when you're a person,
yeah.
Right? Like, the college experience is great. There's a reason that it's expensive. It's not just because of inflation. Like, there's a lot of benefits from it. It's just like all of us wanting to get back to the office, or all of us wanting our kids back in school, all of us want things to be normal. I totally understand it. And in that sense, I get where John Jenkins is coming from. And that's great. But on the other hand, the virus doesn't care about any of that. It's just looking for new hosts. And the closer we are crammed together, the more we're learning about the virus now, you know, the more we are inside with each other and air is circulating and virus is circulating, the more contact we have. And again, all the things that are the opposite of this weird social distancing we're trying to do, the more it's going to spread. And we're, as you said, we're already seeing, just with college sports, by the way, not even with college kids in general coming back to campuses, athletes have been returning for the last month for these off-season workouts. these voluntary, quote, workouts, and we're getting outbreaks. And we're getting outbreaks even in places if the school's athletic department or the school is actually doing a good job of trying to follow some of these measures of distancing and hygiene. You know, a group of guys will go out fishing or go to a campus bar or something, and then suddenly you have an outbreak. Because as a society, we've really failed to control this virus, it's really hard now to control it, even in these smaller, quote-unquote, controllable settings, like a sports team on a college campus. And that's where I think John Jenkins is being really naively optimistic, that this is something that, you know, he could just follow, you know, the right sort of protocols and everything will be okay. It's not going to be okay. And also, like, the best thing you could do right now is limit the overall amount of unnecessary things that you're doing that could spread it. You know, sports are arguably unnecessary. A lot of on-campus learning, even though it's great, right now it's arguably unnecessary. You could still do it remotely. I think that's why you're seeing that Harvard making this decision, and why there's a lot of strong rumors that the Ivy League is going to move sports to spring. The potential benefit of having everybody back is real, but it's not worth the risk. And also, it's going to get disrupted. I think that's the other thing we're missing here. Right. It's just like the larger debate, right, of going back to the office, going back to work, opening our businesses, everything, just to pretend everything is normal. If the virus is still spreading, it won't be. And a lot of people are going to get sick, or they're not going to show up. So then what do you do?
And not to mention the optics at a time when we're still having difficulty getting tests and test results for all the people who want and need them. The optics of having thousands of collegiate athletes being tested on a weekly or even more frequent basis.
That's correct. And speaking, I want to bring, I'm glad you mentioned testing, because that's a really good example of where the NCAA is kind of making a mess of things here, is all these different schools that are going to be competing against each other, just in sports now. I mean, I'm talking about the bigger picture. They all have totally different policies, just when it comes to the one piece of it that's testing, right? Some places are only testing you if you have symptoms. Other places are testing you regardless. Some places are using antibody tests. Other places are using swab tests, which have different, you know, rates of accuracy and different turnaround times. Some places are testing their athletes once a week or more than once a week. Or, like I said, not testing at all unless there's symptoms. And because you don't have sort of uniform best practices here that's being imposed from the top down, you're going to have all kinds of outcomes here. And there was one article in the Washington Post that was really good. They were talking to a mother of a Notre Dame football player, getting back to Notre Dame and John Jenkins here. And she was saying, you know, she was comfortable with what Notre Dame was doing for testing, and she thought that they were doing a good job with frequency. But their first home opener game is against Arkansas. Arkansas is not testing its players as frequently. In fact, not going to test them unless they show symptoms. And she said, I'm going to quote her here. Do I want my child on the field tackling some kid who may have the virus but doesn't know because he's asymptomatic? How is that supposed to work? That's a really good example of what can go wrong when you don't have everybody running off the same playbook, to use a sports term, when everyone's kind of doing their own thing because there's no leadership and no rules from the NCAA. You're actually making it much more likely that you're going to spread this virus around.
Well, it's a terrific piece. You should read it. You should subscribe to Patrick's newsletter. Again, it's realsports.com, H-R-E-A-L, sports. And read this entire piece, because it goes into much more depth than we covered this afternoon. But very thought-provoking, great information as all. Patrick, thanks so much. Love to have you on with us. And we'll do it again very soon and maybe follow up to see where all this goes as we get into the month of August.
I'd love to do it, and I don't know where things are going to go. Honestly, I think it's a coin flip right now for college sports, and even pro sports. They're having problems too, so you're right, we're going to know a lot more in August.
All right. Hey, thanks very much, Patrick. Appreciate it. That's Patrick Ruby with us here on Downtown.